Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which brews beers that are highly rated by beer critics and beer lovers alike. More at gooseisland.com. We don't need to be the only beer you drink. We just want to be the best beer you drink.
From the dusty mesa, a looming shadow.
This is Sound Opinions, and today's guests are the Hansom Family, a duo that has been around for 2 decades, Jim, married couple, Brett and Rennie Sparks. Brett handles the music, Rennie the lyrics, been making some marvelous records. This is their 11th studio album called Unseen, just out.
You know, Greg, we've been fans for a long time, but even if folks don't recognize the name, I bet they've heard this song that's playing underneath us. It's Far From Any Road. It was used in 2014 as the theme song for HBO's much-heralded True Detective series. It was a bit of a deep cut from the Hansom Family catalog, set smack in the middle of their 2003 album, Singing Bones. We asked Brett and Rennie Sparks about the song and how a decade after its release, it became the theme song to such a critically acclaimed drama.
I thought it was kind of a novelty song. It's a tango. It was kind of the first song that we wrote that had a real desert flavor, you know, that had kind of the Nancy and Lee exchange and kind of these Calexico-sounding trumpets and stuff and all this Morricone. And it was kind of an experiment just to see if I could do that kind of thing.
You were going for that? Nancy Sinatra, Lee Hazelwood?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, we were not going for a cop show theme song.
Right.
Plagiarism, basically. No, I was very, very influenced by that.
I am a stranger in your land, a wandering man, call me Sam. Oh, sir, my fire is very small. It will not warm thy heart at all.
So how did you become aware that they wanted to use your music like every week?
It's not anything like you'd expect it would be. We weren't on Matthew McConaughey's yacht, and he was like, hey, dude, let's talk about
High
something.
Five. There's a circle, and it never ends.
We got an email saying that there was some, you know, middleman that was talking about contracts to use a snippet of one of our songs for an interrogation room scene in a cop show. You know, but we were thinking, I will do anything. Just please help us. We were thinking. So, yeah, we were excited about that. And there was a PS, maybe it also might be considered for the main title theme. So they sent us a contract saying we're okay with using it for an interrogation room scene or the main title theme. And then we didn't hear from them for a long time. Mm.
Well, there's a lot of games involved when you start working
there's
with
a lot of people involved
with HBO and
with a new
like
show.
That.
So we were totally thinking that the last minute they're going to switch us out. And so really we found out when the show came on the air, and we were sitting there hoping, and there it was.
Wow.
Literally, we didn't know till the last minute.
Wow. And
very non-communicative.
So licensing is being talked about as, you know, the one thing that may help the music industry, or at least the people who make music in the music industry, make a living off this. What are the benefits? What are the drawbacks of having a song placed in a major cable show like that?
They didn't ask to use it for free, like everyone else, so that was good.
Yeah. I mean, the truth is they paid, and they paid well. I mean, probably not what people assume that they paid.
But there's still
people
Spotify.
People assume I'm wealthy now.
There's still YouTube. Mm-hmm. There's still a lot of ways to hear that song for free.
But the thing about saying that licensing is going to save the music industry is almost as absurd as saying that vinyl will. Mm-hmm. I mean, the problem with licensing is there just aren't that many slots. I mean, it's not like the old days when you could sell a record and actually make $5, you know, a pop.
Well, and there's the fact that
it's a crapshoot. It's a lottery.
You know, True Detective became viral, and everybody was talking about it, and people were really excited about the show. But it could have came and went, and nobody could have cared.
There's
you know.
Probably a lot of theme songs that do come and go, and so we got incredibly lucky that one, they picked the song out of probably millions of songs that they tried in that opening sequence, and then two, that the show actually was watched by people and they did like the song. So those were all like incredibly amazing coincidences that you can't plan or, you know, count on.
Greg and I were excited to have you on the show because we want to tell the story of those 11 albums, of all these years and all these incarnations. How did a nice Jewish writer girl from Long Island hook up with this, you know, born-again Christian Baptist guy from Texas in Chicago? I mean, how did you guys meet and marry?
Well, I tell all the girls that are single, keep tequila in your purse because that's the best way to lure a man. So we actually met in New York, and he was going to school, graduate school, and I was an undergraduate, and I had tequila in my purse, and he was waiting for a date, and I showed up first, and I had something that enticed him.
I was waiting for a girl named Nadine.
By the time Nadine got there, it was too late.
So you met up in New York, yeah. And did you marry out there?
Yes, and I was always a writer trying to write stories, and he was always a songwriter trying to write songs, and we never considered collaborating for many years. We moved to Chicago, and we both were in the separate parts of our apartment trying to do our separate things, and I think you had a heavy metal band for a little while. You were trying to write straight country songs for a while, and then I think
rockabilly bands, and
there was just some one song where you couldn't finish the lyrics, and you're like, you're a writer, just help me with that.
I was trying to sell songs to Nashville in some kind of ridiculous, futile attempt, and I was trying to write, like, pop country songs. Pop country was a little bit different in the 90s. It was a little more tolerable.
And
tolerable.
It's really what
not
the world
much.
Needs now is more pop country. So
I had this song that was like,
helping the
baby, I'm sorry for what I done. I wasn't looking for love, or, you know, some nonsense like that. And I was like, can you please help me revise these lyrics? And she revised the lyrics, and that turned into the first song that we wrote together, which was Arlene. And then the lyrics became, Arlene, I'm sorry for what I done. I wasn't looking for love till I saw your red hair in the sun. What we had could never be love, that was easy to see. But when I saw you in rats pouring coffee, something took a hold of me.
Whoa. You know, and you bring in this artistic approach, you know, with the country songs, with these sophisticated lyrics. And at the time, I remember when you guys were coming up in the Chicago scene, there was still a lot of this carryover from that 80s scene, which was very noisy.
Yeah.
If you didn't have feedback in your songs, nobody wanted to pay attention.
True.
And you guys were, starting to work in this country stuff into your music. And back then, the alt-country scare really hadn't started yet. I mean,
right.
It was like you were the outliers in the whole scene. Like, what are these people doing?
Yeah, I remember going to Milwaukee, and I remember showing up there, and the sound man asking me, what kind of music do you play?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, country, and it's like, you know, a curtain fell.
Yeah.
Well, these albums that the Handsome Family makes, the evolution, I think, after that first album was, you know, the sound that you have now. And the albums have been concept albums almost from the start. And at least me as a listener, grouped around this concept of unseen. Like, Rennie, when you're writing these lyrics, are you thinking in terms of building on a theme in your own head, or how does that happen?
I'm usually just like desperately praying to every god and demon I can think of, please help me finish a song.
Mm-hmm.
So no, it's only afterwards that I look and find, oh, there is a theme. There was a rhyme and reason to this, but I usually am the last one to figure it out.
Yeah, I think with the name, the title Unseen came after three quarters the way through making the record. But, I mean, as soon as we got that, we were skirting around that word, I think. And as soon as we hit it, we were like, yeah, that's it, definitely.
Or things that are at the corner of your eye, flashes of color, and things that you almost glimpsed, things you may have seen but maybe didn't see, and regrets about not seeing. All those things seem to be swirling around in the songs.
So Unseen, does it change at all? Like when we talked about the elephant in the room with, mm-hmm. you know, the song with True Detective. People are paying attention. Does that change your approach at all in making a record in, you know, the months after that?
Well, that was another reason why we wanted to call the record Unseen, is that I think it was really an interesting experience because we have a song that we wrote about something different that was put in a very new context and made sense. But it's real, made me realize that what you want as a songwriter is to disappear completely. I want the songs to take on a life of their own. I want there to be no trace of me, and that the song can be taken in other contexts or other people can sing it. I think it's always a great thing when someone else covers your song. I feel like the song is free and it's not weighed down by my personal needs or ego. So I think that's also the greatest goal you could have as a songwriter, is to disappear completely.
Don't listen to the call. Turn away, away from the missing call.
What if the folks making those stupid car commercials where McConaughey is doing a poor version of The Circle Goes On Forever said, we need to, of course, have Handsome Family in the car commercial.
We have a price. We can be bought.
Yeah.
We're available for weddings, funerals,
well,
whatever you
yeah,
need.
These days, things are a lot different. I mean, there are certain lines that I don't want to cross. Like
maybe we wouldn't want to be
like
in the car in the commercial.
having my face on anything.
But music can be used in different contexts, and they can work. It's okay. And the kids today don't seem to have a problem with that. I know lots of younger people who find songs in commercials and it becomes their favorite record. So it's not the, I mean, when we were young, that was just such an awful thing. We were like,
I'm not selling out.
It
still is an awful thing. It's not good. People, I mean, that's a terrible way to experience the world. You remember the Pink Moon with Volkswagen?
Yeah.
I was just like, oh, man.
Nick Drake.
The end is near. Yeah, Nick Drake. Sorry. Yeah, and that
But you
hurts,
can't blame people. You know? I mean, I don't know who. I think there was. It did seem like as soon as the last Ramones were dying, then suddenly the Ramones songs were being used for really weird commercials all the time. So a relative inherits stuff, and they may make different decisions than the musician would have made. You can't.
I want to be sedated for Ambien.
That would be perfect.
Mm-hmm. How about a song? We're just chatting away here. What are you guys going to play? Or something from Unseen?
Yes.
Okay, so let's do the curmudgeon song.
Oh, yeah.
Then, we're on the
this
topic.
This is a song about back in the days
it's
when you could
connected.
Sell out. It's about the 1980s, and it was inspired by my niece, who is 22, and she one day confessed to me that she didn't know what clockwise was. And I realized you don't really need to know which way clockwise is anymore.
This is called Back in My Day. We had maps that unfolded back in my day. You could drink from the river. We had gods made of clay. There were mile high glaciers, no locks on the doors. The sun burned brighter. We never counted past four. And the birds were always watching. There were monsters in the sea. We wore watch. There were ghosts in the trees. Way back in the day, you're too young to have seen. When the nights were darker, longer and deep. Better recorded on rings of ice, and as the songs turned to water, we couldn't help but cry. Way back in the good days, you're too young to have seen when everything was better. Thank you.
Back in My Day by the Handsome Family from the new album Unseen. Brent and Randy, when I listen to that song, and I think it's easy to sort of say, oh, you know, we're making fun of the new person who doesn't understand how great it was when I was growing up, or you're making fun of that person singing the song because they're clearly living in the past. What I hear, though, is sort of a sense of empathy a little bit. The way the performance is, like, there's a sadness here.
Yeah.
Like, this person is living in the past, and it's so sad that they can't. Whenever I hear somebody talk like that, I go, I feel really bad for you.
Well, it is a little inspired by Brett here, because Brett says to me, like, every other day, one day I'm really going to learn how to use Twitter.
You can tell him. Learn that
tweeting. Just tweet. You don't have to learn anything. You can do it.
Then I get so enraged. I just can't follow through.
But then I was mentioning that at a show, and this woman came up to me and said, you know, who was about our age, and she said, well, I just bought a book called Twitter for Dummies, and it's really helpful. So maybe he should get that.
My name I don't remember. Dark hole I found behind my barn.
When we come back, we'll talk with the Handsome Family about the bittersweet nature of their songs and the unusual reaction from a disgruntled fan because of it. That's coming up on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Stop for coffee.